Let's go with this here. Okay.
There's no masking in Orchaim.
There's no masking in Orchaim. That's correct. There's no masking in Orchaim. That is correct, 100%. I know you're concerned about that. I don't know what to, you know what? All of this, the whole thing here is nobody knows about this pandemic. This, like, no one knows where this really is going to go. I don't know. I know where you think it's going to go, far away, but you know, it's hard to say that. So we're taking it step by step by step by step. Anyways, today's internet was okay because Monday's was horrendous. We're good so far. I know what that was. By the way, it reminds me, just tell you very quickly, the first time that I tried to Zoom remotely, away from my dining room, I set things up, and it was actually my Monday night class. Right before my Monday night class, a big thunderstorm came in and knocked out the power. Literally within 3 minutes, but the class was supposed to start at 8:30, like, you know, whatever it was. At 8:25, boom, the whole house went black. I still remember that. So you never can plan with technology. That's always the downside.
A quick question, because I'm just going to try and adjust my calendars. I have to sync them. So we'll stop July 14th. Do you know when it resumes?
August 24th.
Thank you.
Okay, good. We stop right before. We stop with 3 weeks, and then we go to about the week and a half before Labor Day. Okay, when we last left our heroes, let me just put this up on the screen here. Rav Cook, so where's my friend Rav Cook? Rav Cook, where are you? Should be right next to Steinzels. I'll take Steinzels away, and Rav Cook sure enough pops up. Okay, the last thing we did on Monday, we talked about the golden calf. Remember that? And we had a lot of difficulty with it because it seems like the golden calf, or the sin of the golden calf, really still hangs on. And we said, if not for the sin of the golden calf, then the nations living in Eretz Yisrael would have peacefully surrendered the land to the Jewish people. And ideally, peace doesn't really happen through war, but through the awe and yira mora'ah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which Bnei Yisrael project to the world. And because of the golden calf, this was a pagum, this was defective, so they couldn't project this complete awe and reverence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because they saw the Jews themselves worship the golden calf. We try to really create the world of perfection. We try to make the world better. Sometimes when we fall from where we're supposed to be, like we sin with the golden calf, so we've got to, you know, it doesn't really happen the way it is. We pointed out that all the events of the world are intertwined together and eventually will lead to the final future Geula. And then when eventually the sin of the golden calf is finally corrected and healed, and the Jewish people, when everybody will recognize the Jewish people are really the people of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's pretty much what we learned in terms of going through that piece itself. Now, the piece we're going to do today, it looks like piece number 5, is really a short piece. I'm not sure we can even get to level 6. We'll see. But let's see if I make it a little bit bigger for you guys here. That's smaller. Maybe too big for me. Okay, I'll try to work with that. Okay, so this is in terms of Rav Cook is going to... Well, I'm trying to make sure I got the right thing here. Four was about the golden calf, right? That's what we did. One is up to here. Okay. It's for 5 itself. Okay. Rav Cook basically says that secular culture really creates a repression that has to find an outlet. And the outlet for a secular culture's repression is war. Because after all, secular culture is corrupt and profane, and consequently, remember this is written during World War I. World War I becomes a symbolic happen because of all the global repression that was put down. This almost sounds like Freudian kinds of stuff. And in fact, Freud writes a lot about sexuality, about man's sexual drive, but really, I was just reading here that Freud actually, during World War I, or it might have been right after World War I, he broadened his theory of drives to include primary aggression as well as sexuality. So people saw that there's a lot of aggression that kind of bubbles up to the surface in terms of people, and that's maybe what World War I was really all about. And to really understand this, is Rav Cook's approach is that secular morality is very superficial. It doesn't go all the way down like our morality, like the morality of Judaism that he would say. He refers to the secular culture. He calls, by the way, he calls the term of the secular culture Tarbut Hacholonit. It looks like, you know, like it sounds like Chiloni. But Cholonit really is like a term for profane. What's he call? He calls a secular civilization. Cholonit means the opposite of Kadosh. So the Tarbut, the civilization, the of Cholonit, of Chol, of weekday, of mundaneness, of profaneness. That's what he's talking about. I'll see that in a couple of moments. So this secular culture, this profane culture, which really has a lot, people are repressed because of it and have a lot of aggression, bubbles up through war itself. It's and the morality that it creates, if it does create a morality, it's really very superficial. I'm going to quote you from another one of Rav Kook's writings here. This is actually taken from his Sefer Orot HaKodesh, the translation. Secular morality is superficial. It doesn't penetrate the inner recesses of the neshama, although it may lead one to be good out of an appreciation for the correctness of its logic. Its guidance cannot withstand the assault of man's many passions when they erupt in full force. And certainly this weak morality cannot guide the collective community of man in all its depths and breadth, nor can it penetrate the depth of his soul. So that's another idea, this idea of the superficial morality. And as a result, the Torah, on the other hand, of course, is much different, has the power to refine people. And only when we can actually refine ourselves, only when we can raise ourselves to the highest level, can we actually kind of improve ourselves as well. So secular civilization knows what is evil, but it doesn't know how to correct it. And therefore, this becomes one of the reasons why war is there, why it bubbles up to the surface in this kind of fashion. Now, that's really part of what Rav Kook is writing about. Let's do the piece, then I'll reflect a little bit more about what it is. One more piece that comes out of this is a corollary. Rav Kook's going to refer to this later in his writings, but let's first read this inside. HaKlisha HaMusarit, very short piece. What's it called? Collective Release for Repressed Drives. This sounds like Freud, right? It is. It's Freudian. War is a collective release for drives pent up by Western civilization. That's what he's saying. That's exactly what he's saying. HaKlisha HaMusarit. Kovesh means to conquer, but also means to withhold or suppress or repress. Hakvisha musarit, the ethical suppression, shal pi hatarbut acholonit, which secular civilization has come about through secular civilization, sheshalta harbe aloamim, had a great effect upon the nations. Heika alibam. It laid upon their hearts. It created like anxiety. Harbei midot ra'ot, a lot of bad traits, evil traits, chalayim and sicknesses, the katzpunut and rages and anger, ketzef, and nitzbru b'mamakein nishmatam, and all this kind of bad stuff gathered in the depths of their soul. So, in other words, the secular civilization that was there, it was whatever ethics were there was suppressed by it and had to find a way to bubble out. And Rabot Hadamim v'gdolat ha'chzariot. Because of this, did I skip something? Oh yeah, I did. V'heim yotzim mi'charutzos ha'sem aydeh ha'machomot rabot. And they come out, they come out from there where they're withheld back to all the big battles, big wars. Hadamim v'gdolot ha'chzariot. And all this evil that's happening, this achzar, this wickedness, this cruelty, the great cruelties that are happening. World War I was a very cruel war, right? Gas and so forth. Trench war. So all of this, because they're suppressing the ethics in the profane civilization, this creates all kinds of sicknesses and problems and psychoses, really, Rav Kook would be trying to say. And how does it come across? The way it comes out is people feel aggression. They have to get it out of their system. This leads to war, and Hanaosa Yoter Litivama Botim Zukak Adain Kaid, which is fitting for their nature, it's proper for their nature, which has yet been fixed, which has not yet been refined, and it's still the way it is presently. So war itself that's out there is really about trying to find the profane culture that's just causing these things to occur. This doesn't really relate to Judaism, except Rav Kook is trying to say, obviously, Judaism is the opposite. We want to build a world that has a proper ethic, that's a proper values. We're not the civilization. Now, the part that Rav Kook here does not talk about, which he talks about in later pieces, is the fact that Rav Kook believes that a lot of this secular civilization, or the repression that's done by secular civilization, is related really to Christianity. Okay, I know this sounds like, well, Christianity is Christianity and secular is secular. But Rav Kook really sees Christianity as a, of course, a misunderstanding of Judaism, But more importantly, Rav Kook sees that Christianity is which, you know, in Christianity you're either a priest, you're celibate, especially in Catholicism, or you're damned and doomed, right? You're damned by eternal sin. You can only be redeemed by believing Jesus. There's nothing for you. It's a put down. Man is cruel. Man is bestial. Man only lives by the grace of God. This is your Christian theology. So therefore, because Christian theology and Christian morality became the basis for Western civilization, so the demands that are made on the secular society really were looking down upon people. That's how Rav Kook kind of puts it together. So, in other words, when Christianity actually requires things from people, it may demand from them to be saintly in a way that they can't be. So either Christianity is looking down upon you and saying that you can't be redeemed, or if you want to become something, you become like celibate, like a priest. So then, you know what? Then your passions are all put down, and your feelings are put down, and you can't. So you're being repressed. And on the other hand, you're trying to reach levels that you can't. Judaism tries to create like a middle path. So for example, when the Torah talks about seeing a beautiful woman on the battle, the Yafat Tawar, that's found in the beginning of Parshat Ki Tetzeh, and it talks about taking this woman as a captive, and she has to cut her hair, and she has to kind of stay for 30 days, and then afterwards you can marry her. So what it's really trying to do is really trying to understand, well, sex is going to be there, and you know, you want to, of course, to kind of put a kibosh on it, but you can't. So don't just rape her on the battlefield, or maybe you can, but if you want to take her for a wife, you got to go through a process as well. So all of this is what Judaism tries to run a different way in terms of when Christianity, which is going to say that sex is bad. In other words, or things, or all these types of feelings are negative. And consequently, Christianity in Rav Kook's ideals, Christianity creates a culture that is really a dooms man to darkness and to guilt and to rage. And the only outlet that really comes from that is going to be violence and war. So while it doesn't mention Christianity here, there will be pieces coming up in the future where Rav Kook really spends a lot of time, you know, taking shots at Christianity. And it's really because he feels that the problems of the society that he lived in go back to this kind of theology that is based upon, I know we always talk about the Judeo-Christian ethic, but really about the Christian ethic, not the Judeo-ethic. And he really kind of says it. He doesn't really say it here at this point. He'll say it in the future, and he'll say it. There are three parts to these. There are four parts to this book. We're up to the second part about Milchama. The first part is Israel. Second part, Milchama. The third part is really about Renaissance. And it'll come up in that part, and it'll come up in the fourth part as well. Let me kind of read you one part that's going to come up in the later on in the Sefer itself. And to read you in English, Christianity abandoned the law and founded itself as a spurious mercy and kindness which uproots the foundation of the world and destroys it. And by denuding justice of its divine content, it becomes seized by the basest evil. So put aside justice and put aside law. The pollution thus penetrates the private law of the individual and massively spreads to the souls of nations. This becomes the foundation for the hatred of nations and the unfathomable evil of bloodshed without removing the yoke from a bond man's neck. That's what comes up later on in part about Yisrael Tchiyato. So this is how Rav Kook understands what's going on and what the war is all about, or another facet of the war. All of these pieces really are about trying to make sense and understand why there would be war during the period of time that he's living in. What's the real purpose of what war is all about? And how does it really help us? So in other words, in short, this is a short piece. I say in short, the short piece. But the first thing is, of course, people felt they were enlightened in the 19th century, 20th century. But Rav Kook is saying, really, modern society is a tarbut cholonit. It's a profane society, a profane culture. It's cut off from the Word of God. It's cut off from the Torah. And rather than refining and uplifting man's character, the civilization that he's living in, Western civilization, leaves man in a primitive moral state. And the world war, the one that he lives through, and it'll probably be the same thing for World War II, is really underscores the failure of culture to lift man out of where the mud that he's in. It's just so different, it's just repressed. It finds a way to come out. Judaism, on the other hand, he doesn't talk about Judaism, but it's understood. Judaism, on the other hand, Yiddishkeit is going to refine and perfect man's character by allowing every midah to have its balanced expression. Rambam talks about, you know, shvil ha'emtzai, the middle path. Don't be completely just celibate. Don't be completely just hedonistic. Try to find the middle to make peace with what you are, because you're a combination of beast and an angel. And Christianity says you're one or the other. So Judaism is going to be the opposite. And because of this, I said, because of this, Rav Kook will say, not here, but later on he's going to say that the secular culture really is coming from Christianity, which gave birth to what we see today. And therefore, if you realize that Israel, I guess, is going to be the moral light of the world, because we don't do all of this, so then and that may cause the nations to hate Israel, and may cause nations to seek our destruction. And of course, we have to kind of work against that, because the nations are really not really where they're supposed to be at that point. That's this short piece of Rav Kook. So each of these pieces tries to give another bit of an understanding of what is really going on here, and why is this, what is war, what's the real purpose of war itself. Okay?
So, I'm a little unclear. In this section 5,
right,
when he's saying it's a collective release for drives pent up by Western civilization, is he saying that war is good because it's a collective release, or it's bad?
No, everybody needs a release.
Okay, so it's a good thing.
No,
so
everybody needs a release. You have a lot of tension in your life. You have a lot of unresolved issues. Everybody needs to find a release. Now, there are people who find the release, they go to the library and read a book. Okay, that's good. People who find a release and they gamble, they go to the casino. People find a release and go to the horse track. That may be bad. People do destructive behaviors, right? People become alcoholics and drug addicts. That's also finding for release. They're trying to get away from things. Everybody's got to find something to get away from. You eventually come back to it, but you need to blow off steam somewhere. So what Rav Kook is saying, in this kind of society, which doesn't really understand ethics and morals, what it is, which there is suppression, the only way they're able to get over the suppression, first of all, it causes anxiety, and they're suppressed because Christianity tells them they're bad and they're evil. How do you get out of that? You just feel put down. So what's the way that I work out my issues? With aggression. What's the aggression that we're seeing here? The aggression is the war. That's really the release for repressed drives. The part that's not a good thing. The part that's missing from part number 5 is this is about the world. So what about me? What about the Yidden? What about the Jews? So that Rav Kook doesn't really address here. But he's trying to say what's going on. The reason that war is here is beginning to understand why we're facing the world war, because this is the best society we have. The society thinks they're enlightened, because they're not enlightened. Because the secular society or the Christian society has really put down man as a beast. When you're feeling you're a beast and you've got all kinds of issues that are coming up, how do you work them out? You work them out like an animal. That's called war. What about the Jews? The Jews are the opposite of that. So he doesn't really refer to the Jews directly. But the understanding, the piece that is assumed that you're going to pick up from here, is we're not part of the secular civilization. Judaism is rather trying to refine us, make us better. It's not saying that you're either going to be super holy or down in the dirt, and down in the dirt, in the mud. But rather, there's a way that you can actually come to terms with what you are. And if you want to become an ethical person, you can find the middle road that accepts what you are. Find off some kosher ways to kind of blow off some of your tension, and at the same time, find ways that you can become somewhat holy. You can't become a super tzaddik in one second, and you surely don't want to end up becoming a super animal in the next second as well. But you can find the middle way. But that's not called war. That's called finding an outlet for your repressed drives. That's what Rav Kook is trying to say.
In section 1, where he's talking about the messianic dimension of war, that struck me as a big chiddush, because he was suggesting that war wasn't necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
That it resulted in, and but it sounds like in number, but is that the Jewish concept of war?
What he's saying is one of the outcomes of war can be very positive.
Okay.
Okay. So the outcome of war, in fact, you can have holy people who are fighting battles, as you saw in the Tanakh. You can have good war. Yes, you can have a good war. But he's saying the wars that we...
As a collective release for the Western civilization, then that results in the...
That results in the very bad things happening at the same time. Right.
So the
real question from part 5 is, so what's the takeaway for the Jews?
Right.
So what do we learn from this? I mean, what do we learn from this? A, you should learn, first of all, that don't build a secular society, okay? Don't repress people. If the secular society is based on Christianity, it underscores the weakness of Christianity's approach, which broke away from Judaism. And it also, by the way, may help, I think Rav Kook may be saying, first of all, it may help tell us what not to do, and B, it also may understand why that if we're different, why the nations hate us? Because the nations are coming from a different kind of way of which life runs. Nations are really about being repressed and finding ways out by aggression. Judaism is not about aggression. Judaism is trying to make the world better. And if there's aggression that they need to work out, and they look at the Jews and say the Jews are different, that aggression may be targeted towards the Jews. That may be also...
At the same time, though, with the Efas Toar, there are clearly repressed drives that the Jews have.
Yes, there are. Correct. Yes, there are. So you've got to find a way to kind of make it work. But for example, here, not every day in Judaism is Yom Kippur, right? We have more holidays or festivals which we eat, right? We eat and we celebrate and we enjoy and we live in this world. We make a bracha before we eat the food, and we can't eat everything that there is in the world. There are things that are out of bounds, but we eat, we enjoy. There's marriage, okay? Marriage is correct, but not every relationship is correct. So in other words, it's not saying that, you know, that sin is bad, or it's not saying that being a human being is bad. It's saying you've got to find a way. You can't just push it down under the surface, because eventually it'll find a way to squeak out like the toothpaste. If the front is the end is stuffed up with the dried out toothpaste, it's going to come out the back. It's going to come out the side. It'll break apart. So that's what Rav Kook is trying to say in this short part. It's really more directed to the nations of the world than it is directly to Israel. And I said, okay. When you'll see later on, we come to the parts where he talks about Christianity, you'll say, where did this come from? Why? What's he hanging up on Christianity? In fact, if you were to look today and you say, what are the problems of the world? Are the problems really Christianity? You say, no, the problem is secularism. Right? What is the world, what is religion really faces the challenge? It doesn't face Christianity versus Judaism. It's really secularism, the destruction or the diminution of religion in general. So Rav Kook would like to believe, you could argue that not agree with this, Rav Kook believes that the secular culture that he lived in, which is the Western culture and the Christian culture, is really the culture is coming from the Christian beliefs and created certain repressive drives. You got to remember, in the 18th century, Jews were baptizing themselves. Rav Kook's mind, I know you're going to say, what about the Islamic culture? We're more afraid today of Islam and radical Islam than we are about radical Christians. We're more than evangelicals or other kinds of right-wing Christian beliefs. That's less of a concern to us directly than right-wing Islamic fundamentalists and fanatics. And the answer is, in Rav Kook's life, they did not have Islamic fanatics who had a civilization. They were, they were much more primitive. They were not really fully developed. So Rav Kook saw the real challenge to Judaism in the secular culture that he was used to, the culture when he lived in England and Switzerland and Israel, which was Western culture, which was the secular culture based upon the Christian influences that were there. And what does Christianity do? Christianity put aside the mitzvot and said, no, you're just going to believe in Jesus. What do you mean you believe in Jesus? Believe in Jesus because you're damned. That's really what Christian theology is saying. Christianity theology is saying that, you can't make it. Well, how can I be redeemed? Well, believe, love. God loves you. God will give you His love and His grace, and you'll be saved in that. So I don't have to do anything because I can't do anything because I'm so low down. I can't make it myself. Judaism says not true. Judaism says go do a mitzvah, go learn Torah, go do what you can do. Oh yeah, there are tzaddikim you can go to and speak to them, and they can daven on your behalf and they can help you along. But if you don't do it yourself, you're never going to get anywhere. Whereas Christianity says, no, you got to come and do confession. You got to come to the priest. You got to come to church. That's really, in a nutshell, what Rav Kook is saying. And I obviously, Christianity is a lot more complex than we're trying to make it here. But what Rav Kook is trying to say that Christianity brought the majority of the world to where they were in his time. And as a result, the war that he is living through is a war among Christian nations. It's not a crusader war, right? It's not a crusader war against infidels, but the war that he lived through, which was, of course, the Axis powers against against the British, against the Allies in World War I, was really Christian nations against Christian nations, each in their own interpretation of what it was. So therefore, and why was there war? Because they had to kind of get out this, the only way they could figure things out was to really blow off steam and just kind of work it out in terms of their repressed feelings. So we all have frustrations. There's right ways to get out of frustrations, and of course there's wrong ways, right? There's all kinds of things. And why the example of the Yifat Toar is just simply an example, perhaps, of maybe the most, maybe one of the most radical things, which, of course, was, you know, the idea that, you know, you're there on the battlefield, and man becomes a very repressed animal on the battlefield, very barbaric, and that Yifastor is a way to kind of make it work. Whereas Christianity is nothing even similar to that. Okay?
Similar, Rabbi, if you were to look at this, I mean, where we've seen this within our history was David HaMelech's son. You know, how his arrogance and his drive, and so much so that he raped the concubines of his father.
Right. You said David, or you said Avshalom?
Well, David's son, Avshalom.
David's son, Avshalom. Yes, correct. Yes, right. Yeah. Okay. Should we try to take a stab at number six? Number six is a little more complex, too, as well. Okay, let's see how we can explain number six here. So this is also this deals with the nations of the world, but this actually brings it back to Israel as well. So Israel is like encapsulates all the existence of all the nations. When every nation has worked itself out, and every nation has figured out what they are and becomes into its history, then Israel will be whole, and we can bring all the nations to serve Hashem. But as long as the identities of nations are waffling and hasn't been fully figured out, then Israel is unable to move along to its own final destiny. This is a very radical kind of concept. It's a brand new concept, because you never hear this talking about Mashiach and Mashiach, and got to do mitzvot and everything else. Let's do mitzvot, let's do this, let's learn Torah, bring Mashiach and so forth. No. This is about something happening in the world. Remember, all this has to deal with world conflict. Now, number one. Number two, is every nation goes through a process of development. In the same way that there is every animal, or every plant goes through a process of development. You start with an egg, or a fetus, or an embryo, and eventually you become a child, like, you know, a sapling, or a baby animal, and eventually you become an adult. So too, every nation goes through different stages of development. Even the Jewish people. But really, every nation as well. What does it mean for a nation to develop? What is it? How do you define developing? So every nation, and this is really the part that's very unusual that you'd have to say Rav Kook is what they understand Rav Kook, is every nation has certain ideals that need to actually develop, that become ingrained in the nation itself. I guess if you were to say something like the United States, which is you know, it's got its economic strengths, but the United States also has got religious freedoms. The United States, or the those who came to the United States before it was the United States, the first pilgrims, for those of you guys who are Canadians, I don't know how to make this Canadian too much, but the pilgrims, when they came to the New World, many of the people who stayed came here because they wanted to find religious freedom of expression for themselves. So because the country is founded on religious expression and religious freedoms, the country eventually developed the concept of free speech, rights of the individual, because it really goes back to the fact that a group of people came. The whole raison d'etre of those who came to this continent was to find a new way of life that they could do what they wanted to do, religion, but also their own way itself. Now, when you look therefore at the United States today, the United States has got the Bill of Rights, has got individual rights. There are more rights in the United States than there are really in Canada. We have rights too as well, but the United States was founded in a way that really talked about every person developing their own way. That may also explain why the United States is successful in its economy. I don't know if it is successful anymore, but it can be a leader in science and technology and different kinds of industries, and has got a wealth that other countries don't have, because basically everybody's able to do what they want to do. That's so that the nations develop by their natural development, the natural movement. Now, war, according to what Rav Kook is writing here, is going to help this natural growth. So war is going to accelerate the growth of whatever this nation is going through. I'm not sure why. I'm not sure Rav Kook really explains it. But we all know, at least we knew that in World War II, the war was good for the economy. What saved the United States from the Great Depression was not only FDR's programs that he developed, but the fact that the United States went to war, and of course the industries had to really get going. So war helps define what a nation is and what a nation is going to become. So in other words, nations are growing, and therefore war crystallizes the national character of the nation, and war allows the nation to become what it's supposed to be. Now, what I mean, like their nation national thing. So for example, you could say possibly that I guess Germany is very, you know, Germany was always very exact. Like to be a Yekka, you have to, like, you know, 12 o'clock is 12 o'clock, not 12:01. Very, very offstandish, very, very formal, very, very exact. And that's not just about Yekkishic Jews, that's about Germany in general. So that was the kind of trait that, that Germany developed. The United States developed religious freedom. British became known for their politeness, their formalness, you know, their please and thank yous, perhaps. That's, each nation has its own way that it develops. There's a process. We don't know what nation is actually going to develop in. It's hard to really understand what it means when Rav Kook is talking about that each nation is growing. We're just trying to understand in ways that we can see things in nations. So as long, but here, what does it have to do with the Jewish people? That's the real question. So who really cares about the nations developing? The answer is, as long as the nations haven't really reached their final development, as long as they're still immature, and as long as they're children, as long as they're still not reached the adulthood in their physical and cultural development, so then Israel, or the Jewish people, can't really be complete. Because Israel is to some extent a reflection. Or it's like, he calls it a looking glass. He calls it like, they translate speculum. It's like a scope that you can see the entire world. All the world just fits into it. Same way I take a scope and I think I can see the whole map. I can look outside and see all the way far away. So all Israel is really becomes this this looking glass, able to see the aspeklaria haklalit, this vision of the whole world that really comes together. But as long as the nations are still developing, then Israel can't reach where it is. So what does this have to do with anything? So war, the fact that there's a moment of war, once again, each of these pieces is really independent of each other piece. So war is going to accelerate the growth and development and maturation of every nation. That's how Rav Kook is. This is what this piece is all about. It's a very strange piece, right? Because when does a nation mature? What happened after World War I? Did they become mature? Well, the British Empire, all the empires broke apart. The Ottoman Turks were gone. They completely fell apart. The sick man of Europe was gone. The British Empire started coming apart. All the other colonial empires were falling apart. You go 2 decades, 3 decades afterwards, and all these nations are clamoring for freedom, United Nations, and so forth, 50s. So each nation reaches or begin to develop who they are. But when do they reach maturity? I don't know. Okay, it doesn't really give you a timeline. But when they each reach maturity, that's when Judaism, or that's when Israel, as he calls it, which is really the reflection of the entire world. Everything comes into Israel, because all of history is really meant to funnel into the purpose for the Jewish people, is then able to reach, be completed as well, and we can get on to the time of Mashiach. That's what Rav Kook is trying to say here. Let's just go through this and then we'll kind of put it together a little bit afterwards as well. So war, crystallization of national character, and Messiah. Okay. So what's the small print here? Wars, national characters crystallize. So the national character of each nation becomes more defined through a war. Why? I don't know, because war actually brings the highlight of what nation can do best. You know, nations put on alert, nations gotta respond, nations gotta produce. Israel, as I said, the best example is the United States in World War II, pulled it out of economic doldrums. It was the end of a very difficult era until we went into the war. Israel is the universal reflection of mankind. This is this looking glass. This is like a glass you're looking through, like a magnifying glass. Benefits thereby that every war is able to kind of crystallize the process of each nation. So war in this case is good for the Jewish people, because the nations are moving along. War kind of jump starts or accelerates or advances the development of every nation. And because all of history is about all the nations really being subsumed under Israel, or all history goes into the Jewish history. So therefore, when the nations really develop what they are, then Israel can develop what it has to be, which is, of course, the time of the Mashiach. And therefore, the ikvas of the Mashiach, the hills of the Mashiach, follow upon world conflagration. So war is good for leading us to ikvas of the Mashiach. And that's why you will find, when Chazal talk about Chazal and Masechet Sanhedrin, they talk talking about Ikvus of the Mashiach. They're talking about all kinds of terrible things going on before. There's Gog and Magog, which is, of course, from the Tanakh. But all the other things, there were wars of this war and that war, 7 years of war, and the 8th year, Moshe ben David is going to come. There are all kinds of premonitions about how horrible the world is going to be. So Rav Kook says that's what's going on. That's what it's really talking about. He sees this. Now, the question is, was this World War I, World War I, World War II, World War I, World War II, Ukraine, Russia, plus, plus, plus? Where does this actually end? Nobody knows. But this is what Rav Kook is trying to say in this piece. So in this case, war is not good per se, but it's good for the nation to reach its end of its process of development, and war moves that along. And when war moves that along, it's eventually is going to move along Israel to reach its fullness of what it needs to be, because all the nations have to be completed for Israel to become complete. Because history is all about going to Israel. History is about what goes for Israel. Okay, let's see if we can go through this and make a little sense of this. Really strange stuff. Kol ha'amim mitpatchim. All the nations. Let me just get my pointer here. Okay. Kol ha'amim mitpatchim. All the nations are developed. Mitpatech, mitpatech, mitpatchus is development. V'yotim el ha'pol and come to fruition, come to reality. Aidei tnuotehem ha'tiviot. Through their natural movements, tenuah as a movement, and tevid, natural movement. So all nations are going to develop and become what they are and reach what they're supposed to be through a natural process. And it doesn't explain exactly what this means. But they have to mature. They have to go from the egg to baby to adult. Hamilchamot mamikot et ha'erach hamiyuchad shel kolam. Wars are going to deepen, make it more significant, the value and the specialty of every nation. Ha'erach hamiyuchad, the special uniqueness of every nation. Sachim mevatel et zuarto v'yotzeit l'pol b'hagmara shel kol pratei ha'makeha. Until the form reaches the full expression of all its contents. So in other words, war is going to help develop the unique value of every nation until it stands out the tsurato, its shape, and comes to practical the end of what all the depths of this nation is. So war is actually good for this. War will enhance it. War will help it develop. War will give it a greater room, because lots of things are happening in war. Things become accelerated. Got to get armies, got to get an economy, got to supply chains and so forth. So that's all about what war does. What does this have to do with the Jewish people? Okay, so here comes Yisrael, on the other hand, the Jewish people, Israel. He has baklaria haklalit. Israel is the looking glass. They call it speculum. I don't know what speculum is in looking glass. Speculum means something you can see through. See, Israel is the hospiklaria klalit shekol olam. It's like the looking glass of the entire world. When I look out the window, let's say if I'm looking out at an overlook, I'm looking outside an observatory, and I've got a window that's kind of like a panoramic window. I look out the window and I see everything. That's what Israel is. Israel, it's all being taken in by Israel, not just physically, but theologically or historically. Becholzman, therefore, because Israel is the aspeklaria, the speculum, the looking glass, the magnifying glass, the telescope of the entire world. Everything can be seen when you look through this telescope to see everything out there. You can see from here to Chavez Buffalo or something. You can see Niagara Falls on a good day. They see from the tower, CN Tower. I don't believe it. Okay. Becholzman sheyesh sham ba'am ba'olam, and as long as there is one nation in the world, because Israel is really seeing the whole world. And all the world is seen coming to Israel, a part of Israel. As long as there's even one nation on the world, shelo yatza lapol gamor b'kol tachsisav, the one nation that has not reached its actually full completeness, poal, its actuality, the final actuality of where it's supposed to be going. What happens if even one nation, yesh kehut lumadze biarsa fuk shuk nesvel, there's a dimming regarding that nation in these, or the light that's absorbed of Knesset Yisrael, of the Jewish people. So the light of the Jewish people is not going to be complete. This is very, very, very esoteric terms. The light of the Jewish people is not going to be complete. The end of the Jewish people, the history of the Jewish people, the end game of the Jewish people can't be complete until every nation has reached what they're supposed to be. Now, you've got to keep in mind the 20th century is the era of change. All the empires that had existed for hundreds of years are coming apart. Rav Kook is seeing that. Rav Kook understands that's what the war is all about, and that's what the war is going to lead to. As a result, the war that he is living through, World War I, he sees in a positive way, because what's going to happen is each individual nation is going to find their own self-destiny. Remember, Zionism, political Zionism in the late 18th century, I'm sorry, late 19th century, in the beginning of 20th century, is also in sync with a lot of other nations and groups that are looking for their own national identity to be defined. And they're all pushing and shoving in different kinds of ways. There's a lot of things going on in different countries. A lot of internal turmoil. So Rav Kook sees that and said, well, there's things each country doesn't want to be just the British Empire, like Canada, this Canadian citizenship, right? The Canadian passport and the Canadian flag was a big deal. That we're Canadians. We're not just simply part of a British Commonwealth. Therefore, whenever nations are fighting against each other, they're confronting one another, like Mitgarot is like not just confronting, but a real strong fight. Whenever nations are confronting one another, like in a world war, all the nations are fighting it out, then the special features, the tziyunim ha-miyuchadim, the special pictures, the special shapes, the special features of the peoples are reaching lashlamasam shel hamim, of the nations are coming closer to completeness. V'memele yulad koach hashlamak b'Knesset Yisrael. And when that happens, the power of wholeness of Knesset Yisrael, of the Jewish people as a group, becomes closer to being whole, complete. So when the nations reach their completeness, Israel, who is really encompasses or views or is seen as a tzinor, a pipe, or a telescope, or a magnifying glass, or a lookout, whatever the analogy is, but it's all being seen through Israel, is going to come closer to completion. And this is going to bring us to the foots of Mashiach, Shiavo, which means, of course, Ikvas of the Mashiach, not just the foot, but the footsteps of Mashiach. Shiavo, Yofia, Moher, B'Yameinu, will happen speedily in our days. So as we wait for this to occur, right, all this is really actually going to happen, because this is the opportunity for this to take place. So this is really, this is what Rav Kook sees in terms of war. Now this actually is a pretty significant piece. This is saying that Rav Kook is seeing that, you know, the time period that he's living in is critical, it's crucial in terms of what's going on, because the physical and cultural development of all the countries is going to be stimulated by the war that's taking place. Because the nation of Israel is the soul, is the looking glass, the espaklaria klalit of the world, and when all these nations are completed to become what they are, there's a corresponding. If they're still incomplete, then the nation of Israel is complete, and the lack of existence of Israel is incomplete. And when the nation is brought to its maximum potential, which can happen through the war, so the corresponding aspect in Israel becomes more perfected, more perfected. And therefore, we have to watch who we are and keep out the outside nations, you know, all the different problems from the outside nations. But we're not an outcast. We're part of this world. We're part of this war. We're part of this world. That's the other part that comes out of this. Notice you can't simply say, I'm closing it up, I don't want to see this, I don't know about this, let the British and the Germans duke it out, and I'm going to sit in the base medrash. No, I can't be, I'm not a world outcast, I'm really the heart, I'm the center of the world itself. What is really this all going to lead to? This will be climax when Mashiach will come. And Mashiach is going to lead the wars of Hashem against evil and bring all people together to serve Hashem. But you got to start with war. That's really what Rav Kook is trying to say here. So this is looking at war in a more positive aspect. Not saying that war is good, just this is a natural corollary of what comes out. There was one footnote that I wanted to take a look at here, footnote 74, I think it is. Okay. By the way, the piece that we saw before that we were talking about, the repression, I think this was in footnote number 73. This was also the observation of the prophet of atheism, Friedrich Nietzsche, who was not an anti-Semite. Big discussion whether Friedrich Nietzsche was an anti-Semite or not, by the way. Most books will tell you that he was. The problem with Friedrich Nietzsche, who is this philosopher, who was actually an atheist and believed in atheism, was he died young. He died, actually, nobody knows what he died from. He may have died from syphilis or another venereal disease, but he died, he was single, he never was married, and his sister took over his writings, and his sister published his writings and a lot of the interpretations about what he was trying to say and what was released and not released. least, was influenced by the beliefs of his sister. So Friedrich Nietzsche becomes an advocate, really, of German Aryan beliefs, and Friedrich Nietzsche is seen as an anti-Semite. But we don't know that for sure, and the author of this book, Bezalel Nahor, believes that Friedrich Nietzsche was not anti-Semite. But the bottom line was, the piece we did before when we started today, which was talking about the repression of the peoples, is really founded in the same idea by Friedrich Nietzsche. There's footnote 74 that I want to call your sense to, because what does it say in 74? Let you see what the text is, and then we'll go back to the footnote. 74 is saying, Israel is the general speculum of all of the world. Israel is this aspeclaria, this telescope, this vision, this outlook, this lookout upon the rest of the world. So what does footnote 74 say to us? Here we go. In Oroch Yisrael, okay, it's another one of Cook's safe Sfarim. Rav Cook calls Jewish history the tamtzit of general history, the essence of general history, as if to say world history is micro world history is Jewish history, or Jewish history is the essence of the world history. So world history is all compacted and folded into Jewish history. And Yehuda Levi in the Kuzari says, Israel among the nations is like the heart among the organs. Okay, so in other words, Israel is not really separate. Israel is affected by what goes on here, and that's what Rav Kook is trying to drive with. So he says, it looks at Orsa Kodesh. Rav Kook speaks of Knesset Yisrael in Kabbalistic terms as being, I'm not sure this is going to help us, as being, let's see what the word says. Malchut, being Malchut, which has nothing of its own. It's really too Kabbalistic for us here. But the point of it being that, in other words, that once again you're seeing these ideas here which come across in other places, that Jewish history is really about, history is Jewish history, and the same thing in Kuzari, that we are the heart among the organs. So you can't simply just say we're going to shut ourselves off. What happens around the rest of the world has an impact upon us. That, by the way, is the common theme of all of this part about Muhammad. Some of it is about the good, the bad, you know, the good, the evil, and whatever it is. Some of it is helpful, some of it's not helpful. But the bottom line is, Rav Kook is saying, the war that's going on is not just the news of the day. It's not just something you open the paper and see who won and who lost and what's going on in the all quiet on the Western Front. It's really about trying to understand what it has for the Jewish people, because the Jewish people are part of the world, and the nations that they develop have an impact upon the world. And the nations, when they get their identity, the Jewish people will get their identity. We're not just going to be people that are exiled in different nations. We're going to have our own country the same way all the other countries got their own country. Not the same thing, of course, we're much different. That was the previous piece about their repression, their secular culture. We've got a different kind of culture, but in terms of how they grow will affect in terms of how we grow itself. So it's in our interest that war is taking place. With all the suffering and bad things, this is just another knitch, another twist in terms of understanding the purpose of the war, or what comes out of the war that has an impact upon the Jewish people. Okay, make sense?
Did you notice that footnote referenced the Ishbitzer?
Yes, I did. I did not look it up. I saw that. I didn't see it when I first read it, but I looked this morning, I saw it, and I said, no, should I go look it up? And where is it? Where is it? Up here somewhere, right here. See Mordechai Leiner of the Ishbitzer in Meishilach. Percy, you want to look it up? No, you can't. It's not translated. It's part two. Part two is not translated into English. I could look it up. The part that is translated on Safari is part one. The Ishbitzer has two chalakim, but they were put together at different times. One was put together by his grandson, and one was put together by, I forget, maybe the grandson's son or something, at a much later period of time. Sometimes there's overlap, but the translation of the translated part that's on Safari is only part one. They're two different Sfarim. Okay, I can look it up. I can go look it up. If I can have it here, should I look it up now? Well, we got just have a minute before we close up. I don't know if I can understand it. Chelik 1, Chelik 2. And what page did you say it was on? Chelik 2. I'm probably going to look and say, forget it. Parshas Ki Teitzeh 37-38. I don't know. On the same pages he has? 37-38, maybe? I don't know. Ki Teitzeh, oh, this may not be the same pagination. 37b, I don't have Ki Teitzeh here. 37 here. 37. I got to go figure out which one he's trying to talk about. I will try to look it up and try to have it for the next time around, see if it says anything for us, okay? That's a fair thing. Okay, any other questions, comments? I think difficult.
Just one comment. Yeah. Very hard.
It's all the...
it's difficult, but you know, When you think of it, the United States emerged from Second World War as a superpower and defender of the free world since then. Mm-hmm. Jewish people got control of Eretz Israel and, you know, independence since then. So you kind of can see what he's saying. It's actually, although he wrote it during World War One,
right?
After World War Two, a lot of these things are happening.
Yes.
The other thing is about the Jews being sort of the heart and everything else, the organs. I mean, like Hitler tried to make it about the Jews and said it would be the Jews' fault if there's a war. And then you even see it today with Russia and Ukraine. It's, the Russians are saying it's Nazis in Ukraine, and you have a Jewish president.
Right.
It's very kind of...
So we know that it's always our fault. When Rav Kook is trying to say something else, it's not just that it's our fault. That's really the previous piece, that people are going to hate us because they have all this repression. They don't have to do with it. They're going to take their antagonism out and go after the Jews. That's part of the previous piece we did, 5. Right. This piece is saying something else. As they go through their battles, they eventually determine who they are. That helps the Jews. I did find it here. I'll read it very briefly. It's actually here in Parshas Kisetze. And the Ishpitzer says exactly this. Here we go. Shekol Uma, he's actually talking about the Yishvat Toar, the woman who's in war, okay? I'm not going to go through the whole thing. He says, Ha'inyin Bezeh, Shekol Uma Me'akum Yeshel Koch Michod. Every nation among the Goyim has a special power. Lezu Chachma, Lezu Osher, Lezu Gvur. This one has wisdom, this one has wealth, this one has strength. Their power is just temporary for that moment. Because the good that they have is just temporary. We'll go away in the end of days. Only what they have, a desire for something that's missing from them, like a nation that's got wealth, but the nation really wants to have, sorry, nation has wisdom, but it has desires to have wealth. This kind of desire is the Nikra Chayim. That's the life of these nations. Vezot mekablim yisro mehem. This is what we get from them. The desire that they're trying to develop affects us. Kisro monim lalvana shein lo megramash klum. We count by the moon, and I'm not sure I understand all of this now. We count by the moon, which doesn't have its own light. It's simply a reflection. So our power is a reflection of the nations. So our teshukah, the moon is a teshukah mishtokeket b'shachama to'er ba'ora. The moon has a desire that it receives the light, which is coming from the sun. And this is v'shavita shivyo. This is what it means you're going to take a captive. When it talks about taking a captive on the battlefield, this girl, it doesn't mean just taking the girl as a captive. It's more symbolic that we, the Jewish people, are going to take captive all the desires of the nations of the world, which they want to bring in their lives. That's what it's talking about. It's not, it's completely, it's giving a chassidic shot to the whole Yifat Toar. V'zeh shavit ha-shiva ha-koch, t'shuk ha-shaslam, z'ha koch, u'b'shivya, z'eh kablu me'em Yisrael, aval shar kocham, but what they are now, we're not going to accept. What they want to be is really going to have an impact upon the Jewish people. And when they figure out what they want to be, v'zu ha-chuka ne'kreit shimusha shal Torah, this is the Shimusha, the carrying out of the Torah, which is Gedolah Milimudah, and so forth and so on. So we're trying to become better, and we're trying to absorb all the wants of these different nations to be carried out. Not exactly as we talked about economies, economics, and so forth, but in terms of what the nation really wants. So if I got a nation that wants wealth, that's going to have an impact upon them. When they get the wealth that they want, that they need, they'll be happy. When they want wisdom, they have their own scientists that they're able to develop things, and they feel they got recognition for their wisdom. So that will help us as well. That's what the Ishpitz is trying to say. And he ties it into the Shvas Toar, not really as a girl taking off the battlefield, but we're capturing from the nations what the Teshukah is, what their desires want to be. That's why there's Yifat Toar, because what's the Yifat Toar? He desires the girl on the battlefield. But that's really desiring what nations desire to be in their lives. Very Hasidish, very symbolic, a little bit out of my comfort level, but that's what the Ishpitz is actually saying in Perik in Part 2 on Parshas Kisetze. There you go, folks. Thank you for making me find that. Okay. Remind me in Parshas Kisetze, we'll try to come back to that one. There you go. Okay, which takes us up to another end of another funful day. Difficult stuff, Rav Kook. I admit, I agree, this is not easy going. Congratulations, Shkoyach, for staying with it. But you know what? You've got to really appreciate that Rav Kook writes this. He's thinking about the war. You're thinking about what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. Could you even imagine saying these kinds of things? You're worrying about the Jews who are trying to get out and the poor people who are being bombed to nothing. And what's going to happen in terms of the stocks and the price of gasoline and everything else? That's what you're focused on. You're not focused on Mashiach. Rav Kook is focused on going back there to swell the Mashiach with all this stuff. Okay, there you go.
I think what's also really cool is that the Ish Bitzer and Rav Kook are in the same area.
Well, at least they overlap in this place. Yes, correct. There you go.
By the way, Rabbi, last week at the Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaTzmaut thing at the Y, the Kosman Center, Rabbi Dov Lipman spoke. He was a former MK.
Right, yes.
And he said something really interesting. He said, it wasn't all that long ago to be a, say you're a Jew in Ukraine was a death sentence.
That's right.
Today, to say you're a Jew in Ukraine,
it's
a ticket to life.
Yep, yep.
Because the government of Israel will get you there and all the other organizations.
100%, yeah. Yes. Okay. Good, Shkoa. Okay, good. Great.
Amazing how times have changed.
Times have changed.
Thank you.
Okay, Avram, have a good day. Shelly, right. Great day. Albert, Yom Tov. Yochanan, a great day. And Rafael, have a Yom Tov. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Exciting for me. Hope you enjoy it. Okay. We'll see you around. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Thank you.